This is a production of Cornell University.
I'm calling this meeting to order. It's 12:16, and I'm going to call for late additions to the agenda, but we have a full agenda, so I doubt there'll be any. Are there any? Good. And then approval of the minutes. Any corrections to the minutes? So I just have one, Liz Wieland, our... I think we have to correct her name there. It's Wheeling. So, but I'll just note that's just a grammatical thing. So under number 4, business of the day, it's L. Wheeland, and it's Liz's name is Wheeling.
Oh.
Yep. But other than that, I didn't see anything else. Can I see unanimous approval for the minutes? All those in favor? Anyone opposed? Abstain? Hooray. All right, so we'll pass the minutes. And then we'll start with Jennifer. So.
Hi, everybody. I'm Jennifer Lowe. I do communications for human resources. And I wanted to talk today about a new HR website redesign and get everybody up to date on what we've been doing and then offer some opportunities for this group to be able to get some feedback. So our primary goal what I mean by that is when you look at a benefit section, we wouldn't just be talking about your health care benefits or, you know, insurance, things like that. We would also talk about transportation, pay, time off, things that have to do with human resources but aren't necessarily siloed within that organization. So our primary audiences for the website are current staff, prospective staff leads, prospective staff, HR professionals, and managers. And we partner with CIT to do a lot of research with our primary audience groups. So we've conducted qualitative and quantitative research at all of the different stages that we've gone through so far. So we've done an informational architecture and got a chance to go back and do some testing with our audiences and get feedback as well. So we've had employees involved along the process. So here are some of the goals that we established for the website that came out of that discovery phase where we are conducting all of that research. So an audience-based navigation. I see that DJ has printed out some wireframes for everybody to take a look at. So if you take a look at the top right corner of that wireframe, you'll see job seekers, new hires, staff, academics, and retirees. So we're pulling out information for those specific audiences so they can get a snapshot of what's on the website and what applies to them. So also, responsive design is another goal. And what I mean by responsive design is that the website will be mobile friendly. So whether you're on a smartphone or a tablet, the design will conform to that device. An updated insight search function. This is really important to our audiences. Right now when you search the website, it pulls you out to cornell.edu and you get all of these different results that makes it really challenging to find what you need. So we'll have a separate site search so you can just look inside of our website. Because there is a ton of information there. Universal design and 508 compliance. This has to do with our website being disability friendly. So we want to make sure that people using devices like screen readers are able to easily access the website. We've actually, we're going to be contracting with the Northeast ADA, their web specialist, and they'll be involved throughout the process. So when, for instance, we have the visual design of the site, this specialist will be able to look at it and say, okay, this shading will throw people with a visual impairment off, this size is too small, and make those tweaks early on so we don't end up with a product in the end that isn't disability friendly. Diversity throughout the website was another thing that was really important for us. So, you know, making sure that everything is all of our content has diversity messaging throughout and not just in that diversity section. And then also making sure that all of our images have an element of diversity as well. We're going to have a Drupal CMS as a content management system, so that's what's on the back end of our website to be able to make updates easier. We want to really make our updates more consistent than we have been in the past, and this tool will really allow us to do that. And we've had some problems where we've updated the website and the changes would revert back to months later, and there would be some confusing information on the website. So that won't happen with the new content management system. And then we also want to create a portal, a searchable portal, for forms, documents, job aids, policies. So right now we have especially our form spread out throughout the entire site. So if you want to have, you know, finally that health care form, you have to think, oh, well, I've got to go to benefits, and then I've got to go to health care. What plan do I have, and where might it be under there? So we want to have this database where you can easily search for those forms and find them without having to do a million clicks. And then policies as well. Right now our policies are sort of straddling HR and DFA, and it's really confusing to sort of link back and forth. You don't have an easy way to sort those. So one of the goals of this part of the website is to be able to do that. And the same thing with our job aids for Workday. Right now, those job aids, which are really just like one or two page instruction guides for how to complete a transaction in Workday, they're all on the Workday website, and they aren't really sorted in a friendly way. So we'll make sure that people can find those more easily. So our timeline. So I've been talking a lot about the research that we did. So we already established the information architecture, set up the goals for the website, selected a vendor, and I'm really happy to say that we selected Sanmita, and the president of their company is actually a former Cornell employee, which I was really impressed about. So I knew that he was going to be able to provide really good insight for us. Content development. So we're working on restructuring all of the content on our website and making it more friendly. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. The visual template in the back end, this is what the vendor is going to help us with. We've been holding these stakeholder meetings throughout the process. So once we get a little further along, I'd love to come back and share with you where we are. And then testing and launch. So we're hoping to have a launch in early to mid-June. So we said really this summer, but early to mid-June is really the date that we're trying to make. So the wireframe. So I know that there's some handouts going around. And what a wireframe is it's more like an outline of a website. So this is not how it's going to look visually. There'll be better graphics. There'll be colors. This is more like an outline to plot what goes where. So if you take a look at the front page of the handout that you have, you can see the main navigation. We have jobs, benefits and pay, well-being and perks, professional development, and culture and diversity. You'll eventually be able to hover over those links and see what's underneath each one of those without having to click inside of it. So this is the same thing with Cornell.edu. Right now, if you go to Cornell.edu and hover over the main menu, you'll see a little drop down that shows all of the different items underneath. So that will make a lot easier navigation. And then underneath that, we have some icons with some heavily trafficked parts of our website. These are still up for discussion, but we do want to make sure that people are able to get to the things that they're needing to get to right away. We'll have a feed of latest jobs. It'll probably be staff jobs and a feed from Workday. And then there's this box for policies, forms, and contracts that I was talking about, that search function. And then a section for people to log into Workday. A section just for managers that will have their own content. So one of the big pieces of feedback we got from our stakeholders is that the content on our website is for every single type of audience. And I keep bringing up the example of performance dialogues. And we've fixed that right now. But right now, if you, last month, if you were to go to performance dialogues, you would see the whole model for how we think about performance dialogues at Cornell. And our audience, they really don't care about that. They want to get there. They want to get to their form. They need to figure out what they want to figure out what they need to do. So we want to move that model into the HR professional section so they can reference that and work with their managers about, you know, our philosophy around performance dialogue. And then keep the information just for staff in that performance dialogue section. And remove the manager's contact to their section of the website, so they can access that easier. Then after that, we have a news and announcement section that we're hoping to just turn into a blog, so we'll be able to have some deeper updates from HR in that section. Then there's the See Yourself at Cornell section. I don't know if anybody's been on careers.hr.cornell.edu, but it's our job website, and if you click on this Life at Cornell section, you can see titles from different information from around the university, so we want to pull that up on the website as well. So then you guys can have a chance to flip through the rest of these wireframes and take a look at some of that deeper content. So our goals for content, being clear, concise, getting rid of a lot of the HR jargon that we have on the website, being personable, having direct access to links, and not being so, I guess, long-winded about things. So a great example here, we would normally say on our website something like, if you'd like further information, you can click to the following link. And now we want to be more direct by saying, click here for information. And then creating those, you know, brief, I call them snackable pieces of content. So making bold headlines, making sure that people are really focused on the content and don't read long paragraphs of information. So then there's the invitation for feedback. So we'll be doing a lot more testing as we go along. We'll be testing some of the visual designs. So I would love to send DJ the link for all the information for, you know, anybody to participate in the testing. That will probably happen toward the end of January. So it would be great if you could attend and give some feedback. And then we also have a visual presentation with our vendor on January 14th. And it would be great if you'd want to send maybe two or three people to that meeting and be in on the original presentation. Well, they'll deliver three designs. They call them comps, but three design ideas, and then be able to give some feedback along those lines as well. But that was a real brief sort of quick update. We've been working on this for about like 6 or 8 months, and we're just getting started with the vendor relationship. So if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
What was the name of the vendor again?
Sandita. Yep. And they're actually going to partner with a group in California called ID Design. And ID Design created the diversity.cornell.edu. And I'm really happy with that partnership because IE Design brings a lot of great graphics, and Sandita is really great on the back end. So them partnering together, I think, has been a real benefit for us.
Other questions?
Yeah.
I don't know if you and I talked about this in our other meeting, but I know we were talking about at some point all the other houses and units that had on their individual websites all types of other stuff. Are they going to, are we going to streamline? Are we getting rid of those and driving traffic back centrally?
So I don't know about getting rid of, but we have done an audit. And so the colleges are in various stages of what they list on their website. So anything from a box of here's your local HR content all the way to, you know, closed off intranets that, you know, I don't have access to, you know. And so it's like this huge spectrum, but I will be, yes, absolutely. That will be part of our launch plan as we go back to each one of those stages and talk to their owners about what content they should be removing from their website so they can just link directly to us.
Along the same lines, I see that you've got toward new destinations down at the bottom and then some diversity highlights, but we had talked at some point about since all of the colleges and units have to have a diversity initiative, is there some landing page where anybody could access anybody else's diversity initiative?
So that should be on diversity, the diversity.cornell.edu.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's and there's a whole section that has about team toward new destinations. Gives you everybody. And they're sort of
oh,
they're already sorted out by principal and by college university.
Yeah, but that might be some nice things that we can add, you know, along with that link to that part of the website, directing people to, you know, if you want to see other colleges and units initiatives, click here.
Great, thank you.
Other questions at all? Cool, thank you. I mean, I think I speak for a lot of us when we're looking for something to be organized like this. It's already happening, so it's great to kind of link those folks up. And thank you for inviting us to the process as well, too. I'll look forward for those links from you, and I'll see if we can get some folks to come to the January 14th meeting as well. Okay. Thank you so much. All right. Shifting gears a little bit here. You are a chief. It's like, let me get her a glass of water. Welcome our guest, Vice President Mary Opperman, AVP Alan Bishop as well, for kind of our semesterly meeting with folks. And I know we want to talk about other things that are happening right now. We want to take some time to do that. And also, I see Matt is also here too. So I guess in terms of starting the conversation, did you just want to know some background on the UA appointment? Were we looking for?
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Expressive, aren't I?
Expressive. I cut her in the middle of eating fruit. So, so for the EA members that are not on the executive committee, I think I've been seeing folks on the member list as well too. But as we're looking to staff the Judicial Administrator Search Committee. With Greg's departure, the EA representation on that committee was vacant. And so we were looking to staff someone for that process, and as we were looking for, I think our qualifications were someone that had the willing time, because I think as staffers we know that staffing committees, that this time has been an issue, and also someone that was somewhat familiar with the process, so someone that was understanding of what campus code was, so we're not just appointing someone with zero knowledge of the Judicial Administrator's Office. And as we were looking for candidates, Gina Jamtitha was our nominee as someone that was also, again, filling those qualifications, so willing of time and also understanding of the process as well, too. There was some, I'm going to say, disagreement in terms of our nomination, and so this weekend was kind of spent sorting through that policy.
Can you just help me understand what the disagreement is?
Sure, and so I don't want to speak for Matt, who's the chair of the UA, and so I guess I'd like to invite Matt to come if you want to have a seat as well, too. So I didn't know Matt was able to come today, so. So everyone, this is Matt Tegla, and he is the chair of the University Assembly as well.
Thank you, David. I wasn't sure I had an exam and got out early, so I was able to fortunately attend. I guess, first off, thanks for letting me be here. In brief, the University Assembly is charged with, as chair, it's my job to convene the JA Search Committee. The University Assembly has four of the six seats, four appointed by the Assembly, two appointed by the President's Office. And in the beginning of the year, the UA had sent four members. Greg was among them. Greg's departure, or Greg was also the chair of our Co-Judicial Committee. His departure has left a hole on a number of areas, well, in this case, the JA Search Committee. Looking forward, the UA executive, the University Assembly has spoken about how to replace it, and at our meeting of November 17th, the University Assembly, a member of the University Assembly made a motion to empower the UA's executive board to fill the seat, and I know Ulysses is here, so he was also on our executive board as well as our ranking member. Moving forward, then, the motion, as it is understood by me and is understood by two other members of our executive committee, was for the UA exec to consider the EA's appointment to the CJC first, to appoint them to the JA Search Committee, and in the absence of an EA appointment to the CJC, that we would fill the seat just to ensure that was filled. The disagreement, and BJ, if I'm mistaken, you would all please feel free to correct me, was that I do, and I still believe that the motion, in some essence, ties the UA exec's hand. I know your friend, Mr. Smith, he disagrees with that. Ties their hands, and that I believe we are somewhat restricted to ensure that there is CJC representation, which is the Co-Judicial Committee, which those who don't know is what the body of the UA uses to sort through the campus code of conduct and propose changes, as well as interact with the Judicial Administrator and Judicial Code Counselor's Office. Understanding that, I convey with DJ, and if I miscommunicated or did not correctly communicate, I apologize, DJ, that we were looking for someone who can serve on CJC as well as then we would appoint them to the JA Search Committee. That was our criteria that DJ has told us we were unable to find someone, and therefore had nominated Gina Jamtitha, Director of the Office of the Assembly, You understand they're free to appoint anyone. However, in this case, I believe the motion from the main assembly by delegating has already tied our hands in essence. That being said, after speaking with the remainder of the executive committee, and I think this is unanimous among us, we believe the employees need a voice on this search. We think it's incredibly important. And we're willing to work with the assembly, your assembly, to ensure that you are represented. The first meeting occurred on Monday, and we sent the current chair of the CAC, Gabriel Kaufman, an undergraduate who actually just walked in to the meeting on behalf of the UA. However, the executive group is the designer. When sending him, I stated that if we can find someone from the EA to the end of the year or thereabouts, that we'd be willing to remove Mr. Kaufman and place your representative on it post haste. It was only the first meeting. Obviously, after the new year, when the committee gets further underway, it will be harder, if not possible, to switch someone. Speaking with the executive as well as Mr. Kaufman, our overriding goal is CJC representation on the committee itself and on the search. We believe that the inability of the assembly to find someone who's willing to serve on the CJC due to the time commitment. I want to say that if there's any member of this assembly who would be willing to serve on the CJC, even maybe about once or twice a month, even if they could attend only one or two meetings a semester, maybe we do all teleconference in, or even send comments and fill the seat, because the assembly would rather have a voice from an employee on the CJC versus no voice. And by also serving on the CJC, we would put you on the J search committee, which, to my understanding, Mr. Crawford, correct me, is going to meet on ad hoc basis as necessary until the J is elected around February or March.
That's correct. So, I mean, I guess I want to take a break from like legalese stuff, because we're talking about policy disagreements, and I think what's frustrating for our assembly is that we struggle to staff things, we struggle to find active participants because of, I feel, a staff aversion to getting entangled in deep like politics of this staff place here. And so one of the big things that we've tried to do here this semester is really try and find people that are willing to be engaged in this process and willing to do this volunteer work for the university. And it's been frustrating for us time and time again. Sorry, Hazel. But when we finally find willing people and able people to participate in these things, we feel like we just get the runaround of some other process or procedure. And I think it's frustrating for me as the chair, and I'll take off my chair hat and just speak personally, we are trying to find compromise, and there seems to be no compromise on behalf of staff members. And I think that's where this appointment has really come to a head, is that where are we going to be met in the middle as we struggle to fill these seats with people who are finding that time, they finally are able to commit to these times and figure out ways for them to participate in this process, and we are stymied again by procedure.
Can I just ask because I'm brand new to this, so I'm just trying to understand this. So this intersection of this particular spot with the CJC, is every member of the JA search committee also a CJC?
No, and just to clarify, there's four seats. The University Assembly had allocated us four seats. It happened that we had representation from all four constituencies, which was a goal of ours. Greg was the chair of the CJC, and being that the CJC interacts with code on a very regular basis, as well as JA, in discussions of the assembly, and even when we were picking our seats, the four seats, there was a very strong prior lecture on behalf of the assembly that the CJC should be represented on the committee. And Greg's departure opened up, and I told BJ when I met on Friday, was it opened up two hacks. There was an employee vacancy and now a CJC vacancy. And it was and remains the goal of the UA to fill both of those hacks as best we possibly can. And this is why I said earlier, if any member of this assembly is willing to even nominally serve on the CJC, so we don't have vacancy there, as well as the JA search committee, the UA would be more than delighted to appoint them.
But isn't there another strategy here, which is that there are a number of assemblies who could fill the CJC role? Why is it only the employee assembly who has to fill both?
Well, and you're correct that it could be any assembly. We could have drawn from any of our CJC candidates. The goal of the UA exec, as I understand it, speaking only as a member and as someone who tried to remain somewhat impartial during this as a chair, I think that may have been mixed. However, was that Greg was the only member of the CJC placed he also was employed. Our interim appointment, the February one, is Mr. Kaufman, who is the current chair of the CJC, but an undergraduate. So we can follow the route of representing the CJC on a different assembly, but by doing so, we don't have an employee voice, and we believe that's important. So the goal was to try and fill both of the holes that Greg left. And my understanding of the motion, as I said earlier, that was that empowers the UA Connect Act, restricts us to consider the EA CJC appointment, and that is my understanding, and as well as what I would share by the US members of our committee.
So in order to, one, bring it to the full table, I sit in the UA, so I was there at that discussion. And perhaps one of the basic things we would like to clarify is the EUA exec committee right now would like a sitting EA member to participate in the CJC and then take the seat in the JA search committee.
That is absolutely correct. I'm going to talk about that on Sunday.
So that meaning, therefore, our choice of Gina, she's now part of the sitting EA.
Yes, and this, without going too deep down the rabbit hole of policy, the EA has one vacancy on all the assemblies are allocated two seats on all of the UA committees. The EA has appointed Chief Corona Police, Kathy Zoner, to serve as one of the CJC members. The other member, per the UA bylaws, must be a voting member from the EA, which is one of the reasons that Gina can't be appointed if she's not a voting EA member, creating a part of the problem here.
I have Billy and then Tanya.
My question was, who are the other four that were appointed by the UA? Are they?
The first, obviously, was Greg Mezzi, who was being the right chair of the assembly, chair of the Co-Judicial Committee, and an employee. Emily Sanchirico, who is the current Judicial Code Counselor and a graduate student. Martin Hatch, who is the UA's vice chair for operations and is the emeritus faculty member.
So he's retired?
Yes, that's correct. And then Juliana Batista, who is the president of the student assembly.
So grad student, undergrad, and faculty.
And that's why our goals have to wait.
Are the grad student and the faculty member voting members in any other
company? I do not believe so. And that's why it applies to VP Opperman's. There doesn't need to be, just for this case, the way the CJC lines up, it is so unfortunate.
So my curiosity is that Gina is not a voting member of the EA. That's not a requirement for other members who are sitting on the research committee. So why is it a requirement for me?
That is a very valid question, and as I told BJ, when we walked into the J to pick our four members, it was a puzzle. We had a lot of interest. I think we did a very good job in terms of, in the initial group, figuring out who we needed. And unfortunately, Greg's departure opened up two holes, a CJC hole and an employee hole. The CJC vacancy that's open is only open to voting EA members. So that is why that has been added. It is not a requirement, and I did not communicate this adequately to DJ and your executive. You as the vice chair for operations, I apologize. I believe that I've been clear. I now realize that I may not have been, and I apologize for that.
But I still pose the question of what does being a voting member of the EA have to do with the choice of the new JA is not going to come back to the assembly for a vote.
That'll come to a vote in the EA. I would actually defer to Mr. Kaufman, CDC chair.
So I think the reason that's important is because on the JA search committee, the important thing is was having some CJC representation. But to be on the CJC, as Matt said, there are two employees that can be on the CJC. To fill that second seat, you have to be a voting member of the EA. So that's why it's important. So to get on the JA search committee, you need to be on the CJC, and to be on the CJC, you need to be a voting member of the EA. That's why. So the other spots that we filled not trying to represent the CJC. The spot was, Greg is on the CJC. He's on the CJC, and he's an employee. So that's, I hope that clarifies.
Other than that, support.
I won't say what I was going to say.
So I still agree with Tanya, though. I think the distinction is between a search for a committee staffed by an EA member for the UA versus a university-wide search committee. And I think there are two distinct things there. And I expected us to use it a little bit of different time here, so I don't want to take up too much time with this, because for me, the staff employee assembly is trying to focus on staff business, and we only have so many minutes here in this meeting, and I want to be respectful of time. So if there are just a few more comments, and I'd like to move on to things here. And then Gina, and then Pilar.
And if I may say, my candidacy, it was because there was a timeline, and in the executive committee of the employee assembly, there was a need to fill the staffing. If there is any other interested person at the assembly, my objective in all this was to make sure that there was staff representation. So that's my only objective in all of this. So please, as you're hearing all of this and considering it, if there's anybody who has an interest,
yes,
please step forward.
Which we brought forward the day that Dave came to speak with us, yep, prior to the first initial meeting. We requested participation by the sitting EA members.
Ulysses, and then Alan, and then I'd like us to move on.
I think this is, I don't want to get lost in the process, I think the UA has been bogged down in the beginning process, and they slowly, I don't know, specific in terms of what the composition of the membership of there actually has to be literally in place of their board members. Creating, I don't know where the CJC discussion came from, but that's something that was just created all of a sudden in this discussion. At no point did we have, do we have an obligation to fill the seat with somebody who is also in the CJC. If keeping the CJC informed of the progress of the search committee was something that is a priority, then easily at the general UA meeting, you could have somebody who sits on that search committee give an update and do it that way. This is nothing personal to you. The committee has not met aside from once, and it's hard to describe to see exactly what value having someone on the CJC would bring if it means one has not met, and two, the person filling it, again, nothing personal, has not served on that committee in the same way Greg did. I think that was the reason why everybody was so gung-ho about Greg's thing, was because he had chaired the CJC for so long. Mm-hmm. The UA, by that motion, or UA exec being empowered to then make a decision about who should fill it, does not mean the decision has to be his. It just means the UA can select somebody else. So we can either, as the UA, that choose to accept the EA's nomination or not. And it seems like, based on the discussion that the three of you had, because I was not including that discussion, except the email when the decision came out, was that you were accepting EA as that nominee. In principle, I disagree with that. And that's what I voiced on. I said divorce from Gina, divorce from you, a divorce from the candidates. I disagree in principle with having a committee staffed with no representation from staff, and in principle, the telegroup, as a member, I guess, of a target identity often in society, the telegroup that the person they selected to represent their needs and interests on whatever it is, they're not allowed to have that representation does not sit well with me in principle. It really doesn't. And I just don't like that idea. That's a group telling another group what's best for them without ever asking. And I don't like that. And I don't think that's UA's job. I don't think that's our role to do that. If we want shared governance to actually be shared and to be active, we would allow the EA, so whoever, if they said Donald Duck should be their representative and will represent their needs, that's who we should accept. We shouldn't have to get lost in the process of that. I think this is a bit ridiculous at this point. We kind of beat it into the death at this point. Let them have a representative. Period.
Alan, and then Billy, and then I just want to close this down because I want to be respectful of our guests here now. So
you might have just answered this, but I just had two questions. Who has the authority to appoint the JA search committee, and what is the operative document? Where does the authority or power flow from? Because this is a search committee, and unless there's something in some bylaw or some rule that says the following representatives shall sit on this committee, and maybe there is. I just wondering how the composition, we just started from scratch and wanted to fill up that committee, how would that be done?
There is a campus code of conduct outlines that the UA chair convenes the committee, four members from the university assembly are selected, two members from the president's office. The president has the authority to appoint two members for a six-person search committee, obviously minus support staff and other things from human resources to ensure that it is run correctly. And to Ulysses' point, the assembly is free, the university assembly is free to appoint anyone. We appointed the district codes counselor who has ties can be confirmed by the UA, nominal ties, and they report to us. And to Mr. Smith's point, the assembly, in terms of delegating its authority to the university assembly executive committee, the motion, as I understood it, and I listened to it a number of times, puts caveats on that delegation. It states that the UA executive consider the EAC first, and with an overarching goal of ensuring that the committee is filled. The main assembly has the authority to appoint anyone, and they could appoint Donald Duck if they chose to, or Deck, I don't remember who it was. But my understanding of the motion is made was that it restricts the UA's assembly, the UA's next authority vis-a-vis the main assembly, and I think that's where the issue is coming up.
Okay. And then I'd like to close this, and then we can deal with this offline.
So I'd like to just make two comments. One, I urge the UA to find a way to seat an employee on the search committee. And my second point is I would consider removing someone that you already have on the committee. I think that you perhaps finding somebody from the CJC to take maybe the faculty position. The faculty is retired. It seems interesting to me that they would be on there. So that's just what I might recommend.
So thank you for coming. We'll correspond on that sense as well, too. But thank you, Matt and Gabe. Moving on to our regularly scheduled program.
I hope the reason that you got out early is because the test was really easy.
But I would like to welcome Vice President Mary Opperman and Assistant Vice President Alan Bishop to our meeting. They do regularly come once a semester for EA members that are new to, again, check in with the EA, answer questions that we might have, and figure out things that we can work on moving forward. And so some of the exec folks did have things, but again, this is time for the EA as a whole, so I wanted to cede some time to EA members, if you had questions, but I would like to let Mary, I guess, introduce herself and if she had anything else she'd like to add before we do that.
Well, you introduced me. What do you mean? I'm a Libra. So one thing that I do want to make sure we do is that you wrote a while back, we had a lot of questions that we did not get to at the open forum, and so I want to be sure that we don't leave here before we agree on how we're going to get answers back to all the people that had questions that didn't get answered. Because I know that was something that you had asked,
yep.
And the president has delegated to me, so I must delegate it to Alan. but we do owe folks answers,
yeah.
And I think a lot of that actually is probably going to fall to us to help you craft those, and there's a really lot of them. So... a lot of them, I mean, I looked at the list, I think more came in, were the same or similar,
yeah.
So we should probably kind of group them and maybe give, you know, a general answer to a group of them or something, figure out how to do something like that. But I mean, people took the time to ask questions. We should respect the fact that they did that and get them answers out on your website or something. So I just want to make sure that we don't end without figuring out which of us is going to work on that.
Sure.
Did the idea come up to make that part of the employee assembly column in paw print, addressing those questions?
I'm going to say potentially paw print and potentially like one of our EA updates is devoting a good vehicle for that that's done in partnership with Mary's office as well, too. So it's like one package that kind of goes out.
I'll leave to you how, but we have to actually do the what.
Yeah.
So you could, even if you just put a link to the answer somewhere. There, when last I looked, there was a breathtaking number of questions that needed answers, so we've got to get an up-to-date list and figure out, you know, I don't know if you've grouped them, so it may not be as many when you group them, but there were, when I looked, there was like 60 or 70 of them.
Yeah.
More?
It's about that, I think. Yep. So that's what the handout is up there. It's kind of a list of all the questions, so you can take that with you if you weren't able to pull them off the website as well.
And we should figure out, you know, there are going to be some that, well, like I looked at it, and there were some that were individualized that you wouldn't want to answer on a group website, and how do you want to do that? I don't know if you know who those folks are. Do you want, so that's the kind of thing. We just have to, like, figure that out. Do you want to have that, you know, do you want to communicate with that person and ask them if they get permission to have somebody answer that, or do you want, you know, how do you want to do that?
So I understand, too, that some of the questions, I feel like, especially the individualized ones, didn't have contact information. So is there a specific, I don't want to say like grievance process, but is there some way we can publicly put, like, if you had some individual questions that weren't answered by our broad-based answers, you can visit these specific HR offices.
Exactly. Like, if you had a particular question, or, well, you could even put the question, right, if it doesn't have an identifier,
yeah.
Right, you
yeah.
could put the question, and you could say, you know, this question is, you know, maybe you could see the ombudsman, or
mm-hmm.
you could go to your local HR person, or you could, like, you could give the resources maybe
yep.
underneath it or something like that.
I think that's...
You know, and you could give the policy if it looks like it's a complaint or, you know, something that way.
So looking, I guess, moving forward, because I don't necessarily want to go through...
Really? Because it's so...
Some of them, maybe? I don't know. But I think, now you said you'd like us to work with Alan on figuring
yes,
out...
Yes, I would.
Okay.
I would like you to work with Alan.
Which Alan?
That's the Alan.
Yeah.
Well,
like you work with Alan.
So, I mean, are there, have we done anything like this before, I guess, as we kind of do, like, have there been massive?
I think that we had questions that we answered, and I can't remember. Yeah, we did. I don't remember why.
I can't remember
the specific.
Was it around the freeze?
I think it might have been around early. It might have been around the early retirement incentive where we were getting questions and answering them out.
And what was the format that you used for answering?
Well, those we were answering, I think, one by one. But I honestly don't recall.
Okay.
I think the vehicle. I mean, these are questions came to you,
yeah.
So
yeah.
the vehicle
yeah.
should be a vehicle that you want.
Agree, right.
Yep.
I think our job is to give you the content, and then you should use a vehicle that you want to use.
All right.
So I have a question. Looking at these, and I had when Tanya first posted them on Vox, I remember reading through all of them, and so some of them I'm not recognizing. So is this, are there additional?
These are different. These are the ones in the president's address, not the streamlined ones.
Oh, thank you.
That's
yeah.
why. That's
yeah,
why.
Yeah.
That explains. And then, so the ones that say addressed in other fora were things that she has already, or that Garrett has already spoken
yeah.
about somewhere.
That's correct.
Okay, thank
yeah.
you for clarifying that.
So I'm, and I'll defer to our communications chair as well, too, but I'm thinking putting together two or three EA members to come together, filter through these things, and then work with Billy and Alan on our communications piece, because I think this is one EA update that could be dedicated to the follow-up from the president's address, and here are all the unanswered questions or unanswered submitted questions that we have, and here's either resources to answer those questions or where they've been answered in either other forums, you know, memos, those kinds of things as well, too. In terms of process, does that sound...
I mean, he can use just the communication committee
yeah.
itself without...
That's what I plan on doing.
Good job.
Yeah. And I convene them for one.
And that's staffed, right? We have
yeah.
people.
There's lots of people.
Yes.
That's like the most interesting committee.
Yeah.
So interesting.
Good. Other questions about the follow-up for that? So at least that's a target person to work with, things
yep.
and identifiable goals for there, too. Cool. I know we had scheduled just for one. I don't know if what your time frame is.
I
well
have to go. But is there anything else before I leave? Any?
I would just say we're 6 months in with our new president. Anything to share in terms of is things going well, or are there things that we as employees can take back to our constituencies?
You know, I think that is going well. I mean, you know, she's very different than David, and I think it took people a little while to get used to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the announcement about the College of Business was a good example of who she is. I mean, she's
mm-hmm.
a very she's not afraid of a challenge. She's a pretty you know, she's a go-getter. I mean, she's pretty assertive, but you know, I think people are getting the hang of her. I guess that's what I would say. I think people are getting comfortable with her as a person and as a leader, and it's taken a little while. I mean, yeah, she has a brand new team. Her whole leadership team, for the most part, is new, and they have a different approach. But it's, you know, we knew this was happening. Like, I can remember sitting here and saying to all of you, this is going to be really different, you know, and it's going to feel really different after having basically everything the same for almost 9 years. And this, and so what we expected happened, and now I think people are settling in, settling down.
Bring the folks in her leadership team with her?
No, not a single person. And you know what's interesting? She told me she was at dinner someplace out in Ithaca or Lansing, and someone said, so I understand you brought your team from USC. She did not bring, other than her husband, you know, he kind of had to come. Not one person. Nobody with her. No. She promoted Joanne DiStefano to EVP. And most of the changes were changes that were predetermined, people who we knew were going to be retiring or leaving. So, no. Everything was, we knew was going to be happening. So, yeah.
Any other questions? Cool. Well, thank you for coming. Before you leave, I just want to recognize someone will be leaving us as well from the Assembly's office. And I just want to recognize her work in front of you as well. She's been with the Assembly's office for a good amount of time, so she is our institutional memory in many, many ways. And so Amy O'Donnell is taking a different position. I don't know if Amy want to talk about that a little bit, but I'd like to just recognize you and all your work with the Assembly's office in front of Mary.
Wonderful. Congratulations. You'll be close by our group. You'll like it out there. There's a lot of places to walk and eat.
And parking.
And park. That too. Well, congratulations. It's wonderful. It seems to be the magic number.
Thank you very much for coming. I appreciate your time. And
this
we'll
is like all HR all day. First you had Jennifer, and you had us. And that, didn't I see Kathy come in?
She's here.
You're going to be so sick of us.
We'll get to Doug Ellen.
Yep. I look forward to it.
Here, thank you.
Kathy, you can come up and take our spot.
Okay.
Look, I'll even bump my table.
Did you want to plug some?
Did I need to bring copies? And she has said that you had already seen them, so I can project, or if you all have copies, there is a need to project, so
I'm going to
No problem.
Have a nice holiday, Mary.
You too.
Enjoy
your
break.
I will.
Guarantee you. Perfect answer. And I only get excited about my brain.
Oh, I think it's cold enough now that if something comes out of the sky, it's going to be white.
Yeah.
But only today and tomorrow.
Yeah.
There
we go. So first of all, thank you for having me back. Amy Parmley and I were here, maybe a couple months ago, talking about performance management and performance dialogue moving into today. So this is a piece of that whole effort between the performance dialogue and career development. You know, just a piece of the school development of where we're moving forward. So none of you even. couple of years ago. Isn't that kind of surprising? So we thought that it was really time to update it, and we're changing it from a performance appraisal, which is a term we don't necessarily use anymore, to the performance management process, performance dialogue, when you actually go to look at the policy. All that said, in Workday, it's called the performance review. That's the Workday term that goes on all over the world, wherever Workday is used. So I just want to point that out. Again, modernizing language. We remove the supervisor review section that says the supervisor should review the results of all dialogues of his or her supervisor. So in other words, what that's really saying, in a good example, is Beth Garrett would review all the dialogues of all the, her direct reports that they gave to their direct reports. Does that make sense to you?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that's realistic? So we did take that out. When performance dialogues are at Workday, what is available and what we talked about last time is the supervisor will be able to see those results. So the reality is that review is still available should someone want to do that, if that makes sense. So we felt like, you know, we're still doing that. It's just not that they're going to sign off in any way that they reviewed it. Combine the language in the various sections to decrease the number of sections. Again, probably are very aware with the burden of bureaucracy and the streamlining. Everything that we can do to streamline what we're doing across the university, that's our goal. How do we make it the most efficient for any of us on campus using all of the various tools that we're using? So I don't know about you and your roles, but we in our roles are getting simplify. Whatever we can do to simplify understanding, to simplify processes, to make them easier. It's very easy. We see each other every day. I just had to note that. So that's really the thread that you're going to see through this. Combine language from the various sections, I think I said that. Supervisory supplement, we deleted that. The leadership skills for success now in almost all of our documents are included when we talk about the skills for success. Mm-hmm. So instead of, you know, calling them out separately, they're just all, there's skills for success and there's leadership skills for success. And I have the screen up if you want to be reminded of it. When you pull up the screen in Workday, the questions say, please, I'm making the words up because I don't have them exactly in my head, but please note what this person has, what they might want to focus on in the coming year, something like that. It'll say there's a link to skills for success, a link to leadership skills for success, and over time there will be a link to competency. And then the overall rating section has been removed, which gives us leeway in the future to either have a rating or not have a rating. So one of the things that I don't know how many of you follow performance management across the U.S. and the world. So there are about 40 companies who are no longer using performance ratings because they say that it actually gets in the way of the dialogue. You know, that the staff member comes out and they feel like the conversation was all about their anxiety, what they were feeling was all about that rating at the end. And there was a university conversation that Mary included me in, which was about, it started out with the University of California at Davis raising the question, and the University of Arizona, VP of HR, was the first one to respond, and then there was just multiple responses after that. But the conversation was, how many of you still use a performance rating of some kind? And the University of Arizona was having a summer-long discussion about a performance rating or not a performance rating. And staff were really saying, you know, it's not really helpful. What I want to have is a dialogue with my supervisor. I want to know what I'm doing well, what are opportunities for improvement. So with that, what we are doing this year when you, and it's up to every college and division. So your college or division may require a rating, but we're letting each college and division decide for themselves, do they want a rating or do they not want a rating? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So again, gives us that leeway to change. So now, please raise your hand or stop me if you have questions. Give a salary improvement or they cannot give. It's completely up to the supervisor whether everybody gets one or not, or people get any. One of my daughter's colleagues has not had a raise for 4 years. So in terms of the response to your question is, we still say we are a merit-based employer, but the reality is many of the units across the university, and Alan's been in the room when we have these conversations, are giving a flat rate across the board. So in that sense, the mean isn't as high as it used to be. Does that make sense? So last year in human resources, whatever the performance rate was, the salary improvement rate was, every single person across the board got the same amount of this. So yes, and when dollars are so small, in a sense, it is so much more, going back to the streamlining of your bureaucracy, there is so much more effort to split that out by 0.1 here and 0.1 there, that in this climate, it's just not happening as much across all the units. Does that make sense? So that doesn't mean that units can't give bonuses and such when they feel that somebody's performance is worthy of that, but that's the reality. I don't know, Alan, you were there last year when we talked about it. I would say about probably 3/4 of the divisions and colleges went with it across the board. Not all, but quite a few. So in that sense, it just doesn't have the same meaning that it did when we had raises of 4%, 5%, 6%. So it's an excellent question. I really appreciate the question. So I'm not going to go through this every page. I'm assuming that you have read this, that if you have questions, we'll go to that area for both of these. So what questions do you have? That was a great question. I appreciate it. So yes, we're still a merit-based employer. In terms of directly tying it with this, when you have a 2% pool, you know, that's really challenging. So, and I say that units still need to pay attention to equity. They still need to make sure that they are staying as close to the mid-market as they possibly can for all roles. So all of that stuff is still happening. What questions do you have about the performance?
I have a question. So okay. In terms of the performance analysis process, can you talk a little about when there's a disagreement between the review and the review,
yep.
How does that process work?
So the process is going to be very much the same. This is when everyone gets into Workday. So right now, units are getting to decide whether they're all going to Workday or they're going to do a pilot in Workday. Quite a few units are all going to Workday. Amy Parmalee just sent me a list last week. I should have actually brought that with me. I have it in my email, but I didn't like things to call it out. So some units are doing a full, we're all going to work day. Some units are doing, we're going to pilot a small group, just like Alumni Affairs and Development did this summer. So in work day, so I'm going to speak in work day, because I hope a year from now everybody's in work day. Is that fair? So in Workday, if you may recall from a couple of months ago, the staff member goes in and they fill out their performance dialogue. Their response is to the performance dialogue, I should say. Remember Amy had shown you this screenshot?
Yep.
So this is a sample one of Seth. So Seth would go in and he would fill this out if he were the employee. And then once he gets it all done, this is in the training that we're rolling out, here is where I was talking about you can link to the skills for success, you can link to the leadership skills for success right in the document. So in a sense, we're not calling them out in the policy because they are called out. Then they get down here, this is the new individual development plan question, because what we found was the vast majority of campus were not going and filling out an individual development plan. That piece was completely getting ignored. So this gives the staff member, which the staff member owns 80 to 90% of this, the supervisor's role is to help make sure that they can get that growth and development. This gives the staff member the opportunity to fill out that individual development plan. And then you have your overall performance and comments. You have your review and compliance. I reviewed my staff position description. You can comment on whether it's accurate or not and whether it reflects. And then for those that need it, the MCAA addendum, we're actually seeing if we can pull this out right now. We can't. It's something that we have to have in there. But then, once the employee hits submit, that's the first time the supervisor can see what was written. The employee does not hit submit until they're comfortable with their supervisor seeing everything they wrote. Once the supervisor picks it up, then they fill out their half of it. Once both individuals come together, and this is the key point of where we're going with this whole process, we want performance management to be about dialogue and coaching. Dialogue between the staff member and the supervisor, and I implore all of you to help us get there. I really do mean that. It's all about the dialogue. What am I doing well? So if it's Bill and I, and Bill's my supervisor, Bill is literally sitting down and having the conversation with me, because the reality is we know that doesn't happen 100% of the time here. We strive to have it happen, but we know it isn't happening. So it's about the dialogue. We actually sat down, we talked about his performance, what did I do well, what did I not do well, and he is coaching me. Likewise, what I would like to add, is not written in the policy, is that I, the supervisor, if Bill's the supervisor, I have the ability to also give that feedback to him. It's not written up in a dialogue form, unless, you know, it's asked for by my supervisor, but I have the opportunity to give him feedback, and I hope that Bill is also coaching me. But the focus of the performance, we really want to take it to what is my role, dialogue about how I'm doing in my role, and coaching about how I'm doing in my role, because that's all connected to career development. Does that make sense? So if all of that happens, and to your question, there's disagreement, there's a box here that you can go back in, just like you can on the paper form, and say, this is where I disagree. It's an unlimited number of text characters, so you can write as much as you want to write, and you can then review. And the beauty of Workday is that dialogue is captured. No one can say I lost it. The supervisor can't say I can't find it. The staff members can't say I can't find it. You know that? So I just think that that's a really positive thing, because it raises the accountability.
Questions.
I'm actually going to yield. I have some questions that have plagued me for years on the teaching processes, but I'll yield just because I know we've got to get on to other things on the agenda. So.
Okay, I was going to say, if you have a few questions, we can.
Oh, it may be a whole can of worms.
Oh, that's fine.
So, sort of as Michelle was asking her question, it says one of the concerns I've always had about the process is that there were, it's not just my supervisor making my decisions when it was the rank thing, that somehow that was tied to resources, so that there were people who had no idea what I did making a determination as to whether I should get a 2, 3, 4, or 5. And that was very concerning to me, because I thought, these people don't know what I do. How can they evaluate me in my position?
So are you talking about a calibration discussion?
Yeah.
So with the point of the calibration discussion when we're using ratings is that if you're in
use our group the way we do.
Yes, perfect. Alan sat through those discussions with me. So if you're in organizational workforce development, or if you're in workforce and policy relations, right? What we do is we bring all the people who report to the leaders to the table. And we go through that, and the first thing we do if you're looking at ratings is I say, we had a conversation about, Alan, what do you think it means to be performing at a fails to achieve, and we would work all the way through the levels, successful, frequently exceeds, consistently exceeds. Alan and I, at the end of that conversation, actually were on a much better understanding of what he thinks the top rating is, the 3 is, and what I think a 3 is. He thinks a 4 is, I think a 4 is. He thinks is the one we were using numbers, we don't use numbers anymore, but consistently exceeds. So we would be on the same plane as much as two human minds can get on the same plane. Then we would go through the names, and we would put all of the names on a piece of paper, and we typically did it with post-it notes. And when somebody, let's say Linda's name came up, we would put where we thought they fell in that 5-point spectrum on that post-it note. Every one of us would add a post-it note.
Right, but I guess to that point, I mean, that's procedurally, but if Linda only has one supervisor, there's 17 people sitting around that table putting post-it notes on that she's never even met before, how are they in any capacity?
Perfect. That's where I was going. So there are a couple of people in Alan's group that I didn't know and I didn't relate to. Same with Alan in my group, we would just not put a post-it note. Like, if I really don't have any idea of your performance, I don't, you know, give any indication of what that should be.
So in this case, using Linda, sorry, Linda.
It's fine. It's fine.
She only has one supervisor at the table. She could just get one post-it note.
Could.
Okay.
So then one question. We've seen in several of the questions that we've had in terms of employees, sometimes a supervisor is not necessarily one that can fire, can coach, and have that great dialogue. Is just someone there to actually tick a time card? They clock in, they clock out. So what in theory is the best practice for that? I mean, in theory, you do have that supervisor there present. They do know her. They know she comes in. She knows she leaves. But really evaluating that work and performance, I mean, is it like best practice to then say, at that point, the weight to then evaluate should be in their colleagues' responses, you know, when you nominate 3, 4 people?
I would say I've done this with a lot of units on campus. I've seen this process work. I can tell you, and Alan sat in on enough of these, if someone is truly a high performer, successful or above, everybody in the room somehow knows it, feels it. You put, Alan sat there with me. You put those post-it notes on that person's name, and when typically the ratings are almost the same across the board every time. So what I would say for you, as for any of us, myself included as a staff member, that you actually want those other voices coming in. Because if you're doing a good job as an employee, if you're being accountable for what you're being accountable, supposed to be accountable for, if you're meeting expectations, I can guarantee you that others know it. And they rate you accordingly based on what they've heard or seen. Do you want to add anything to that? I think it's to your favor to have people talking about it personally. So I tell my staff, when people are talking about you, that's a good thing. Because what we do is every conversation I've facilitated like that, we tell people to focus on the positive.
I think if anybody has a concern along any of these lines, go to your local HR group and say, you know, this doesn't seem to be reflective, this group doesn't seem to be reflective, knowledgeable, whatever the concern might be. I think the HR person would have the right dialogue with the supervisor. Hey, can we expand this? Can we subtract this? But at the end of the game, as Kathy said, if you don't have knowledge about somebody, you're not going to be giving, you know, rating or a comment, however we're talking about it. But talk to your HR person and make sure that the group, if there is a group that's, you know, identifying, if the direct supervisor is just somebody who watches your chronos, then obviously you're going to need other people. It might be customers, it might be clients, it might be people you serve, you know, whoever it might be, to get a better picture of it. But yeah, HR can help you do that.
I just want to wrap this up because we do have one more item that we have to do at this meeting. So I'll collect some, if there are further questions, I'll certainly collect them and send them over. Yep, for both of those things, and I'll send them over to Kathy. But thank you for coming today. I know it was a packed agenda for things as well, too.
Thank you,
Kathy.
So I will give you until after break, and then if I don't hear anything more, I'm going to send this on to Lauren and her crew to move this whole thing forward.
Yes, I agree. Okay. So hear that. Send your questions.
You.
Otherwise, the boat will be missed. All right, the last thing we have on our agenda is the executive vice chair elections and the process. Actually, I won't bring it up on there too, but entertain nominations. So we've been doing that for the week. Open for Q&A for the candidates that are there, and then vote by secret ballot. So questions on that process at all? Okay, so opening nominations. The one nomination I had received was Tanya Grove, and so... Tanya, are you still interested in accepting that nomination? And again, I'll leave that open. Are there any further nominations for executive vice chair? Okay. Open up the Q&A section. Tanya, if you want to make any comments or folks can ask questions of Tanya. It has to be an official, like, ballot because it's an officer thing. So, questions at all? Okay. I'm not sure about that, actually. Do you know if there's... So, if she's running unopposed, do we have to vote by secret ballot because it's an officer? I mean, that's...
I think so.
Yeah.
I thought
we didn't in the past. I don't think
whatever.
Can we vote quickly and then?
Just because it has to be recorded.
Yeah.
I mean, people could choose to not vote or not vote for you, and but all of those. I mean, there's especially running unopposed. It's not that's different than being unanimous.
Yeah.
So it does need to be a vote.
Get out.
So Amy, if you will pass the other ballot.
Yeah.
Yes.
No. Well, then only for the caucus, not for the vote. You can certainly vote, but if there's caucus right now, that's why she has to step out.
There's no caucus.
We're just voting.
I think she's not going to vote.
Yes or no?
I think just write her name down because you could abstain, yeah. So.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Oh,
yeah,
you do.
Do we have a quorum?
We have an
it looks like she won.
I'm counting quickly.
It looks like she won.
All right, by unanimous decision there, too. So welcome, Tanya, as our new executive vice chair.
Yay.
Thank you, everyone. I just before we leave for break.
What do we do with the vice chair for internal operations?
And we have a timely committee request.
Yes. So that's what I was just going to talk about right now. So there is a timely committee. Speaking of staffing our committees, Bridget Brady is looking, again, with Greg's departure, an EA representative on the Transportation Task Force. So, again, working with some of the transportation initiatives that happen on campus, I think this is very important, especially for staff members. Transportation affects us immensely in many ways. What's that? She doesn't say here. Sorry?
Who is she?
Bridget Brady, the Senior Director for Transportation. So they're looking to bring this to the EA, not scheduled yet, but they want to work with a representative before they bring it to the EA. Am I accurately representing that?
They need to replace Greg on that committee. It meets, it does meet regularly, but
never said like that.
Ad hoc, I know.
Right.
Once the committee is staffed with the EA members, they have an issue, a matter to bring back to the assembly, but they want to make sure that it's staffed with an employee first.
Do they deal with parking?
Yes.
Yes.
Phil Bill.
No.
I nominate Bill.
I will consider it, but
okay.
Can we put her in touch with you so you can work out the
discuss?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Again, every EA member should be on at least one committee and staffing these things. As you can see, it's important
everyone's
for our voice.
Everyone's on one, right?
I believe that's all in there. Thank you again for a good semester. I know we had a lot of reorg things to do. Before we vote to close the meeting, there are cupcakes because it's someone's birthday today. Happy birthday, birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Billy. Happy birthday to you. And with that, I'll entertain a motion to close the meeting. All right. Any dissent to closing the meeting? All right. We'll close the meeting.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.